So hello everyone, welcome to fourth episode of Talking Observability. And today we will be talking about interesting part where we will see like how observing is not all about debugging. And for that we have with us Kisle Verma. And Kisle, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. Hi Jayesh. My name is Kisle. I've been building distributed and service-oriented architectures in different companies for a few years now. In my free time, I write a newsletter and a podcast called It Depends, where I discuss software engineering and technical leadership in its different forms.
Cool. That sounds interesting. Like, you can just give us a link and we will paste it in the box for our viewers as well.
Just head on over to kisleverma.com or find It Depends on Spotify. I think that's where it's at.
Cool. Should check it out. So I got to know about you from your blog post called Observing is Not Debugging. And it was pretty interesting to me that, okay, this was a like completely different view than what I read most of the time. Right? So people talk about metrics, logs, traces, and all that stuff, but it was a little bit of a different take on the whole thing. So before we go ahead and discuss like other particular points about observability in general, so I will just ask, like, how do you define observability, or what is observability for you?
Sure. So, observability has, in my mind, has a very specific and technical definition, right? Observability means the ability to ask questions to your system, to observe your system from the outside, to figure out what is going on the inside without having to make code changes, right? Like if you know, you see that your system is having some problem. And if you need to kind of then go inside the system, add some log statements here and there to kind of figure out what's going on, your system is not in an observable state because you have to go inside the black box to figure out what's going on, right? So the observability is the ability to ask arbitrary questions, not just a certain type of question, right? Whether what is working, what is not working. The question could change over time, and any complete observability mechanism should support the ability to ask nearly any arbitrary question and kind of answer it from the outside without having to go inside. I think that's how I look at observability.
Yep. And yes, like that pretty much aligns to what standard definition people provide, right? But still, like, nobody is acting on it, I feel, when we look at most of the observability products. It gives you view into a particular structure, particular data types, but it's not very generic. And that you are saying that it should be very generic, that you hit a question and it should answer that question for you. Yep, that's pretty interesting, and that's nice. So in general, like, yes, as I was saying, there are people who are following pretty much standard things when it comes to observability. So what is your view on everybody talking about metrics, logs, and traces being the pillars of observability, and that's satisfying most of the use cases for everyone? So what is your take on that part?
So it's interesting because this whole thing of three pillars kind of came from a very different context, right? Like, these were the three artifacts that you could look at, right? The idea of observability has nothing to do with any of these three things. It's like, you know, like Newton came up with gravitation and we had that little equation, right? It works, yep. Right? But it is, as we know now, that it is just one way of how relativity kind of manifests itself. You're looking at an artifact, not the underlying mechanism of it, right? So if you look at logs, for example, right? First of all, let me just say that I don't have any problem against these things. The only problem I have with, you know, everybody talking about logs, metrics, and traces is that there is a underlying unity to them, which people are not kind of understanding, right? And which then prevents us from adopting any kind of other approach, right? Like if you have logs, you have metrics, you have traces, your system is observable, when in practice it is not. That leap from the basic questions to arbitrary question, right? If you know the question, then you can put a log. You know that this is going to break later in production at some point in time. So I should have a log statement here just so that I know what is happening, right? This is a known problem. None of these things answer the unknown problem. You can never ask an arbitrary question. And that is kind of my quibble with this whole set structure of logs, metrics, and traces. You can all answer known you know, known unknowns in some sense, but you cannot answer unknown unknowns.
And that was the whole problem when we started shifting with from monitoring to observability, right? Like, monitoring helps you answer those known unknowns, because at one point you know that this thing will break and you have to monitor it. But when it comes to observability, the expectation was that we, and in the modern systems in general, they are too complicated, right? With microservices, APIs, Kubernetes and everything, it's already too complicated. So there are too many unknown unknowns and there's no way to track it when we are just using three kind of artifacts like metrics, logs and traces, because it will just provide you insights into what you already know or what you think you should already track. That's exactly. Kind of a direction.
So observability or any of these things kind of sits on one side. Monitoring is kind of using these mechanisms, right? And I think only talking about these three so-called pillars kind of limits what you can monitor and how you can monitor the system.
Yep. So I will just like pivot here a little bit that if not these three signals, then what do you think, like any other signal will be interesting, or what additional signals you feel will be interesting when it comes to the whole observability as a generalized notion?
Okay. So it's actually these signals, as we are calling them, right, in this conversation, these signals are just one way of looking at the system, right? So I think, and I so do a lot of people, that the underlying mechanism, right? Like if you look at a system, it is working in the real world. And what happens in that? Things happen. Events happen, right? Log is just saying, like, for example, a typical log statement will say calling service XYZ to for user ID, something, something, right? This is an English statement. What has happened is that there is an event that has happened in the real world. A client has made a call to a remote service. If, unless a human reads this, right, there is no way of figuring out what happened. There is no meaning here, right? So I think it's not about signals. It's about understanding that all of these signals are fundamentally stemming from an event-driven perspective. There are events which underlie every single one of these things. And if you have the raw underlying events with their meaning intact, you can derive these and any other number of signals. It doesn't matter. The signals are just one way of looking at this, so to say, raw data. But this is the problem with the three-pillar conversation, right? You're not talking about the substrate which is resulting in these things. We're just looking at artifacts and saying, this is useful, that is not useful, whatever it is. The underlying fundamental unifying construct is that events are happening in the real world and these events have meaning. And once we start looking at this, right, like a lot of things can change for system design, system operations, and so on.
Okay. So as you are like anyways talking about events, so do you feel that like using events as a primary data type or primary data source for your observability will make the whole thing more efficient, or how do you see it working out in modern architectures, and how do you see it helping out in modern architectures?
Okay, so it's not about efficiency, it's about effectiveness, right? So once you, if you only have your artifacts like matrices, for example, right? I have a bunch of matrices, right? I have a bunch of traces and I have a bunch of logs, right? I can answer a certain amount of questions only because a human is intervening, right? The only way to understand, to put tie all of these three things together, right, is for a human or human-like intelligence. Maybe we have a few AI things which can do a few, you know, help in that process now, right? But essentially what we have done is we have taken the onus of determining anomaly from the system to a human, right? And imagine like running a very large scale system, and then it's just practically impossible for a human person to kind of stitch these things together and then say that, oh, this kind of would have happened, right? If you're looking at something else, if you want to look at some other kind of data, like why this would happen, no idea, right? So which is why I feel that working at that event substrate layer, which kind of underpins all these three pillars, kind of allows us to ask questions more creatively instead of being bound by the log statement or the metric number or whatever, right? You can frame your own question in some sense, like a query, right? Like you can write a query that how many times did this happen, but that did not happen. Now, that's a question that you want answered, right? So I think that's
so correlation is.
Yeah.
So correlation is kind of a key when it comes to asking those questions and getting those answers, and events provide you a high level of correlation, or very like better correlation than doing that with manually with humans, or some human just interpreting that this is how it would have happened. So that's the direction you are kind of going.
Yes, into, right? Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So you talk about like some interesting stuff in your blogs. I have read, and I will link it down in the description as well. So that structured logs are just half-assed events. We might need to moderate this, but okay. So can you elaborate a little bit on that, and how did you came to that conclusion?
Sure. So as I wrote in this blog, right, like this is pretty much like I have worked at a few companies. I've spoken to a few like other colleagues, friends of mine who are working in other shops, right? This is pretty typical evolution of logging. If you look at just logging, right, in most companies, you start out by, you know, your simple logger, log.info, log.error, whatever, right? It gets dumped to your file. And then over time, there is a little scraper sort of daemon which picks up all these logs and dumps it in Elasticsearch or something somewhere else. And you can go run your, look up all the centralized logs and all of that stuff, right? So the beginning of this is what? Like essentially you will say error happened because something. It's written in English, right? And that's the log statement which goes maybe with the name of the module, maybe with the line number of the code, you know, a few different things, right? As the system evolves, people realize that, you know, they need to want to be able to search it better. They need standards in the company and so on and so forth. So a kind of structured logging paradigm emerges where each log statement has a well-defined structure. It will have maybe, you know, like four or five standard infra level fields, pod ID, VM ID, local IP address, service name, and so on, right? Because now you have microservices. So all logs from all services are going to a single place and so on, right? So, and then there'll be the actual log statement, the message that the developer wrote in there, right? This happened, that happened, trying to do blah, whatever it is, right? Now, if you look at this, and this is typically done in what, a JSON structure, right? It's a JSON entity, which has like all these many, many, many fields in some well-defined structure, right? Now, if you just forget about where this came from, right? And you look at this JSON structure, this is like an object, so to say. It's an object, it's a well-defined schema, right? So, and if you look at events, what are those, right? What this blob of text is trying to convey is that this happened at this location and here are a bunch of other meta details and so on, right? So if you just look at at an event and then at a structured log, you would not know the difference, right? Like there is no visual structural difference between the two, just to look at it, right?
Yep.
But there is a very, very fundamental, in my opinion, difference. And that difference is that an event has a meaning. Like in the context of the person who publishes it and in the context of the person who consumes that event, right? That event means something, right? The event could be request received, response emitted, order created, shipment dispatched, you know, whatever. Like these are not log statements. These are real things happening in the real world. They have a meaning attached to them, right? But when we just simply take that English statement, right? Shipment ID 12345 has been dispatched from the warehouse, right? The meaning is lost. Even though it looks the same, it doesn't mean anything except to a human, right? And which is where we lose this entire capability of unleashing machine intelligence on this thing. Because for machines to understand that statement, that English line is very hard. Like it takes advanced capabilities to do that. But if you treat this log like as if you were firing out an object, almost like a request towards your analytical system, then you would deliberately, consciously, as a developer, make sure that looking at this, a program can read this. A program can understand what this means. There'll probably be an event type. There'll be an event entity ID or whatever, right? Like you would structure this better. The meaning would be preserved, right? And that is why I came to that statement, like structured logs are half-assed events, because they look like events in all like kind of infrastructural regards, but they drop that crucial property of semantic, you know, when they're emitted from a system, which is why,
yep.
And this single act, right, kind of forces a human's hand, like a human has to go in now, because there was a meaning when you were reading the code, but when you look at logs, the meaning is gone. And now you have an English word, which you now have to kind of figure out.
With logs, so, yeah, is always hard to retain that
context. That's kind of where that came from, yeah.
Yep. So event basically helps you to retain that context, and as well as the correlation with other parts of data, other data sources you are getting from. So, yep.
Yeah,
and because
it means something, right? Like you can write a program that can correlate it with other things that mean other things, right? Like,
yep.
an order has been packed, can be correlated with a shipment has been dispatched, right? If you structure it that way, like by writing a program or something, right? But these two English statements are not really correlated unless you or I look at it.
Yep. I agree with that part. So we talked a lot about event-driven observability in general in the course of this one. But if you want to highlight just 2-3 benefits of event-driven observability, like what will be those?
So let's talk about 2 things, right? One is from an observability perspective, right? Like if you have raw events, meaningful events, right? Then you can ask what I earlier called arbitrary questions to the system, because each of these things, right, can be interpreted by a machine. So you can create a very complicated query of some sort by joining all kinds of data sets, and a machine can still kind of come together and do it at large scales. Correct. This is becoming practically impossible for humans, right? Like it's just 30 microservices. I was working at Uber. Each call was going through some 30 different steps to kind of deliver its result. I don't know how a human would do it at that scale. Right? This is kind of out of hand at that level.
And 30 is still a small number.
Yeah, right. So, and then what has happened is, because we are now talking only in terms of logs and metrics and these 3 pillars, right? We drop the context, you know, at that level, we remove the meaning of the event. It just gets reduced to a log or a metric or something, right? Then we have to apply all kinds of machine learning and these advanced technologies to again make sense of this, right? Like, why not do it in one shot? Keep the meaning, man. Why are you removing it from there?
Yep.
Right? So I think having this kind of meaningful evented data can like really allow us to unleash machines on observability, and not like a like humans should not be operators, right? I don't want to kind of sit and stare at my logs all day long. That's not a good use of my time or my brain, right? So having that meaningful data allows us to straight away kind of say, okay, I can write a program which will do this, right? Which kind of is very difficult without having meaningful evented data, right? The other thing that I think is, and I think this is hugely useful, right, is that a lot of times I've heard people say that, okay, you know, our system is not observable, so what should we log, right? And if it's a reasonably complicated system, what do you log? You don't know. Like, you put log statements wherever you see an if else, whatever. It's kind of arbitrary, right? There is no mechanism for this, right? But like, just if you ask your manager or teammate, they'll say just log everything. I don't know. Right.
Yes.
There is no real mechanism for saying what is useful and what is not useful. But if you try to identify the events that are happening in your system, right? Like, what is happening here, right? You are forced to also acknowledge that your system, if well designed, has internal boundaries. It's not about just microservice architecture. So the boundary is only external, right? Within that external boundary of the microservice, there are a bunch of little tiny things which are doing their own thing, and they kind of knit together to provide the overall functionality, right? Let's say that I want you to identify a handover between 2 little things, right? This happened, right? This guy said this to this guy, right? And you can't find that boundary. As a developer, it is a super powerful tool to identify that your internal system design boundaries are not well defined. You know, it's a little blobby, right? It's not a well-defined modular system. Right. So, because as soon as you have boundaries clearly defined and clearly understood, you can easily say that this module tried to do this thing with this module, right? Same thing with what we do with microservices outside. Microservice A tried to talk to microservice B, request, response, whatever, right? Same thing applies inside. Yes. So as a developer, right, this process of switching context in your head to go from string logs all over the place to like identifying what is happening here, and I need to capture whatever things are happening between two modules. Kind of, I think it's a very powerful system design tool, right? Like I said earlier, we remove context and then we try to apply AI ML to bring back context, right? If you keep this focus in your head that I have to talk in terms of events, right? Almost as if you were writing them to a table in your own system, I think a very different kind of system design perspective emerges, even for developers and not just operations or observability related people.
Cool. So retaining context, identifying boundaries, and then being able to ask arbitrary questions are kind of a main benefits you will get out of event-driven observability in general. Cool. So many people are trying to move to observability using observability in their orgs, or maybe trying some things out or exploring stuff. So what will be the advice you will give to them when they are getting started with observability in general?
Okay. So I think for starting out with observability, I think the first thing to remember is that observability, it's difficult to slap it on later. Like these things are hard. Like if you want to, like I mentioned earlier, having the observability event perspective kind of affects how you design your system, right? So if you want, and you should want that to have observability in your systems, right? So if you do that, then you have to think about observability from the get-go, from day zero, from the design requirement step, right? Like if you are getting a requirement saying build this or that feature, like one of the first questions should be like, okay, maybe I build this, but how will I make sure that this thing is working, right?
Correct.
So I think that is the first step to take, that observability should be baked into the requirement gathering system design step itself. That is one. And the next one is, I have said a lot of things about don't use logs, use the events and this and that, right? Yes. If you are very early in your journey, I think the most important thing that you can do is to invest in a central log store. I would call it central event store, where all systems can push the data in together, right? Because event logs, these are slightly next level things. If you don't have a single place where developers can go and write basic queries, never mind like complicated queries and all that, right? This is going to be very, very difficult very, very soon, right? So invest upfront into centralized event/logging/metric stores where if all systems are pushing their data. And honestly, these days, like with all these SaaS tools and AWSs and all these kind of other things which are out of the box, right? You don't really need to do much. Like these are solved problems in the world. Just use them from day zero, right? Then the last thing I would say is don't like start off by thinking in terms of events. Like think about what your system is doing and how you are going to find out what it is doing on the outside. That is the in order of priority. This would be the last thing in some sense.
Yes.
But that's what I would suggest to anybody who's just starting on their observability, monitoring, alerting, that kind of journey.
And the last part you mentioned was first thinking about basic questions you want to get answered from your system. Like just to get started with. So would you have like some list, maybe like what would you like to know, like how to figure out what would you like to know from your system? Because for some, it will be infrastructure. For some, it will be maybe some application matrix or some data around the application. Like what will be the critical thing to get started with in the first place?
Well, I in some sense, it depends on the system. Right. So it's not like generic that kind of cuts across. Okay. But let's imagine the typical system that we see these days, right? Like maybe there's a UI, maybe there's a service behind it, backend talking to it, and maybe there are multiple backends kind of talking to each other. let's just say that that's the case that we are talking about, right? What we would want to track at the very least is basically all interactions between whatever you consider modules, right? Even if it's a monolith, forget about microservices. Even within monolith, you would want to track how many interactions and what interactions exactly are kind of happening between any two things that you consider modules, right?
Yep.
It could be classes, it could be jar or library or framework, I don't know, whatever it is, right? What happened? How many succeeded? How many failed? How long did each one of them take? Right. But you see now, right? Like we're already going into derived land. Like if I say try to do at time one and happened at time two, T2 minus T1 is already the latency. So I don't have to track that explicitly, right? Yes. But we are just talking about what you might want to monitor. So let's just kind of ignore that for now. Right. So how many successes, how many failures? What is your latency distributions of each kind of operation and that is kind of going on, right? Then these are like your core kind of technical metrics, right? You should try to build things, have a system in which you can track your business metrics in exactly the same way. How many orders came in the last half an hour? How many bookings happened in the, you know, from this place to this place and so on, depending on your use case, right? So there isn't all, once you start looking at events, right, there isn't all that much difference between a request response and a financial transaction happening on your platform. They're just different levels of abstraction, but they're all represented by events. So, you know, you can kind of use the same holistic event-driven model across all layers of abstraction and, you know, use the same systems to do your business reporting as well as your technical reporting. It's the same thing.
Yep. Cool. And I think that will be really helpful for people who are just getting started and looking for some advice around how to get started with it. And that's really great. That was all from my side. And thanks, Kisle, for joining us. And thanks for giving us very good insights into the whole observability thing and giving us insights around specifically event-driven observability in general. So, and thank you all for listening and hope you will like it. And I will link down all the blog posts I was talking about during the course of it and Kisla's podcast and all in the description. So if you want to check it out, please check it out as well. Cool. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.